back, pulls up the three, boom, knocks it down. Curry from the corner at three, puts it in.
For overtime, makes it, Garrett, Murray.
Welcome to this edition of the MVP cast from me, Mark Woods. My guest is one of the leading lights in the WBBL, but with a deep involvement in basketball off the court on top. She's a central figure for Nottingham Wildcats, a member of the England team that took silver at this year's Commonwealth Games, and a Great Britain international. Siobhan Pratt, thanks for joining us on the MVP cast.
Well, thanks for having me.
You have described yourself as a basketball hawk. And I guess, you know, your mother Pauline played for England. I remember playing in the league for Rhondda Rebels. Your dad Chris was a coach. You know, still involved with the Wildcats as chair of the trust. Is that where the basketball holism, is that the word, basketaholicism comes from?
Yeah, sounds like I never really had a choice when I think I was lucky that I kind of grew up in a family where basketball was, you know, really, really important. And I was able to grow up at Wildcats in a club structure, in a family structure that was just really enriching. And, you know, I had role models everywhere. I had people looking out for me everywhere. And it was just a really nice environment. And I did do other things. My parents wanted to make sure that I had other interests so that I could choose when the time came what it was that I wanted to do. So I never felt forced to do it. It just felt like the natural thing to do, really.
So were weekends as a child sort of spent crawling along the sidelines of basketball courts and, you know, just being taken on buses? I mean, is that the memories of childhood that are kind of always there?
Yeah, basically. I remember, like, still to this day, I can remember things like sitting on the bus with all of the senior team, which would now be, I guess, the WBBL team. And, you know, there'd be people like Sam Proctor, who is just kind of joking around with me and giving me that little bit of, like, banter that helps you to grow a thick skin. And you'd have... I remember all of it so vividly. There was a lady called Rachel Hayes, who was an Irish-born player who played for us. I used to do her hair on the way up to games. I'm sure she loved that. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I guess when you're little as well and you're coming home from, like, a road trip, you get to go to bed later and things like that. So, yeah, that's kind of my memories, really, just following mum and dad around and until I started playing, really. But as a young one, yeah, that's my memories, just being involved in basketball.
Do you consider yourself in a way fortunate because the culture of this country is such that a lot of kids don't get involved in basketball in that way? They don't necessarily grow up supporting a team or having that kind of deep bond with the game. You were involved with your family, you went to the club, you were in a proper junior system early. I mean, that's so atypical, but I guess those kind of things are what can help you as a player, or do help you as a player.
Yeah, for sure. I think I was really, really lucky. Being exposed to the game from such a young age. I've never been the most athletic of players. I've always had to use my mind to keep up with everyone. So I think had I not grown up in that environment, had I not understood the game to the level that I understand the game, I'm not sure I would have had nearly the amount of success that I've had. And I also think it just gives me a different perspective as well, I think, on basketball as a whole. Like, I've been talking recently to the coaches around the club about how we promote the national teams to our younger players and how the national team should be so important to them. It should be kind of the pinnacle of their career. It's a privilege to play for your national team. It's not a choice. And I think I was always brought up with that view. I remember it at the dinner table. It was, you know how there are some bribes that you get for getting your children to eat their vegetables or to sit at the table and eat properly without your elbows on the table. And, you know, my dad was a stickler for those things. And I remember him saying things like, oh, you know, you can't come away with us on the national team. You'll never make the senior women's national team if you don't eat vegetables and you don't eat properly. And I remember him saying things like that and alluding to players like, he would say, well, Tracy Killingly, she eats broccoli. And it, you know, and that was kind of the environment that I grew up in. So to play for the national team for me, it was, no matter what I'd done personally, was like the absolute, like, ultimate goal. And I think it's something that I really want to try and recreate within our club. I think it's already there, but I'd just like it to be even more so now, when the kids have just got so many other things and ambitions that they want to do, and that's great, and I really advocate that as well. But I just don't want them to lose sight of how important national teams are.
So you ate a lot of carrots, you're saying, as a kid, and broccoli.
I was forced to, yeah.
I mean, last summer you were appointed director of basketball operations at the World Cup, which is, you know, an unusual job within British basketball. And I suppose the premise is to manage all those systems and structures and the academy at the club. I mean, tell us exactly, what does the job involve?
Yeah, it's... It's funny because I was just in the States, and director of basketball operations in the States, it isn't the same at all. Mm. But I think, you know, over the way that we're fashioning the job role, it's kind of really integral to how the club runs. You're right, like how all the pathways merge together between the club, the academy, a lot of like the backroom business meetings, all of that stuff that actually I haven't been part of before, but I'm really, really enjoying. And just kind of like the direction that the club is taking kind of really falls to me.
And how much of that do you think is taken from that experience as a young player, as a child, sort of what you enjoyed, what you appreciated, what you learned from?
Yeah, I think it's massive in why I got the job, because, you know, I'm pretty proud of what I've achieved basketball wise as a player. I understand the game as a coach. I'm a qualified teacher. I think I've got a lot of credentials that, you know, that if I hadn't had the history that I've had at Wildcats, would have still been in good stead for this job anyway. But I think really the main part of it is, who is going to love this club more? Who's always going to put this club ahead of themselves, ahead of everything else, and put the kids at this club at the centre of everything? And I just, you know, I don't think there was kind of another choice for that. And I think that is what is always going to drive me. And I'm going to make sure that this is a success, because I just know how much I got out of being at the club as a young child and a young person, and even now, like as a young adult, or not so much a young adult anymore, but just learning daily, all the time, having people around me that are always going to pull me up on things if I need to be pulled up on them, or challenge me on thinking about things differently. And I just know how much I've grown from being part of the club, and that's what I want to give to all of the players that kind of come through our doors, whether it be through the academy doors, the club doors, whether they just come through to use the arena. I want it to be the same thing. I want that direction to be the same, that every person comes into this place and they get better as a player, but first and foremost, they learn how to be a better person.
I mean, we talk a lot about arenas in this country. Obviously, Leicester is the kind of example that everyone's looking at. But Wildcats were really one of the first clubs to kind of manage their own premises. You've got the building. In practical terms, what is the benefit, or the biggest benefit of having that real estate there to use?
Yeah, it is massive. I think very early, you know, Dad kind of realised that if we are going to be self-sufficient, we have to have a way of making revenue that is steady and that we can rely on. And the arena is just huge for that. So the way that the structure is that the Wildcats is run by a charitable trust. And the arena is kind of there to service that trust. So any of the money that we make, it goes back into the trust, which goes back into like the projects that we run, the clubs that we run to help young people in the area. And without the arena, none of that would happen. Without the bookings that we get aside from basketball, I mean, we have all sorts, like Ultimate Frisbee, and you wouldn't believe some of the sports that you'll see just absolutely packing out the arena some weekends. But basketball will always take precedence because it is so linked to the trust. And yeah, I think it's been a massive, point to our success, yeah, but just to our longevity. And I think it will continue to be.
I mean, your dad's still very heavily involved in the trust, and obviously with him and your mum. How much, when you kind of have those moments of what should we do or what do we need to do here, I mean, how much do you still kind of lean back on them, and even probably playing basketball as well?
Yeah, if you asked him, he'd say not at all, and I'm quite stubborn and I don't listen to him. But no, it's interesting. It's been an interesting dynamic, especially the last year, like with me starting this new role. But Dad is very, very good at managing situations, at managing people. He can kind of get to the end goal without you realizing that he's got to the end goal. I can sometimes be more like a bull in a china shop. So I think he really, you know, he helps me a lot in that way. Dad also used to work in local government. So when it comes to things like applying for grants, you know, just those formal processes, I've learned a lot from. I wouldn't be able to do the job without kind of the guidance that he gives me, and also the other members of the trust give me in those areas, because they're new things that I'm learning. But it's nice. It's nice to have kind of the decisions in our hands. But what's also nice is I feel recently with the addition of Kenrick, he really cares about the club as a whole. And it's one of the reasons that we hired him. He cares about the direction of the club. He cares about the young players in the club. And he does everything and anything, like, beyond his job description, to kind of help us with that. And what that does is it gives us, because we have to be wary that we're both priors and that we maybe have thought about things the same way, although very open-minded, I feel that we are, and we will listen to a lot of different ideas. We have a lot of different ideas. It's always good to have a fresh voice, to have, like, outside eyes, outside ears come in, see the situation for what it is, and be able to kind of help in that way. So I think that's been absolutely massive for us this year.
I mean, before you took this job, you were a primary school teacher. So yeah. I wonder kind of how much has that been, because people talk about obviously the stresses of that, but the satisfaction you get from it. Was it a wrench at all to give up that career to go to kind of throw yourself fully into basketball?
Yeah, it was. Look, don't get me wrong, as soon as the opportunity came for me to be involved in basketball fully, outside of playing, I would have taken it. You know, basketball is my love. It's my first love. It's what I'll always, you know, I'll always go back to. But it was difficult because, you know, teaching is something, it's not something that you go in 9 to 5. It's not that kind of job. It's you go because you love it. You take the stress, the hours at home working, because you love the kids, and you want them to do well, and you know that you're an instrumental part in how well they do. So when it comes to the kids and the time with them and the impact that I felt I was having on them, I do miss it a lot. But I think I still can have that impact in this new role, just using, instead of using education as the vehicle, we're now using basketball.
One of the campaigns that, if we can call it a campaign, you've been involved with is this campaign called I Am Hijubi. And it's a sort of national drive in a way to get, especially young Muslim girls, but young girls in general, to play sport. From getting involved with that, what do you think the barriers are that still probably need to be lifted or better explained, perhaps?
Of getting Muslim girls into sport, or just
young and girls? And girls in general, but Muslim girls, I suppose, as well.
Yeah, I think look, no matter when you're what type of girl you're talking about, whether you're talking about Christian, Muslim, atheist. Women, unfortunately, females in this society are, and I don't think people want to think that this is still the case, but there are, you know, like underlying currents as to how we should behave and how we should act and what is the right thing to do for a woman. Like, for example, I'm nearly 32. I haven't got kids. I'm not married. I'm in a really stable relationship that will happen in this relationship, and I know that that will. But I've chosen, or we've chosen, for that not to be the case because of the things that both of us, and especially me, the last couple of years have wanted to pursue. And I think that, and I still get comments, well, when are you having kids? When are you going to give your parents grandchildren? And, you know, I still get that. And I don't not want to. I just, I have things that I want to do. And I think it's really important that young girls feel that they can have ambitions that don't sit on making sure other people are okay, and that don't sit on taking care of other people. I think you can have your own ambitions and have your own successes, and you should have your own ambitions and your own successes, and all of that stuff can come later. And I think it's just about, and we talk about it with inner city kids as well, females and males, just kind of raising like their aspirations and their ambitions of what it is they can actually achieve. And sport, especially basketball, is just a massive driver in that field, because, I mean, what better vehicle to show people that how they can fail, how they can succeed, how they need to be able to learn to fail to succeed. So I think behind like I Am Hijubi is really just the message that you can do this and you should do this because you're a girl. Or because you're a person, just like that boy is next to you that wants to be a professional footballer. Like, it's okay for you to want to do something in sport, or it's okay for you to just do sport and meet new people and grow your confidence and to learn that you can use sport in so many different ways. You don't have to win a silver medal at the Commonwealth Games to get out of sport what I've got out of it. You can just go along and play with your friends in the local league every week and still get the same amount out of it and the same lessons out of it. So I think that's kind of the main message, really. And it is really important to me to do stuff for young girls, for young women, especially like in the sporting arena.
How much do you find the time is spent, not even sometimes just explaining that idea to kids or getting kids buying into that idea, but getting the parents to buy into the fact that they should let their kids do this rather than going, oh, it's a waste of time, or they have other priorities in life?
Yeah, I think we do get that a lot, actually. So when we talk about kind of the Muslim girls, sometimes like in my school that I worked in my primary school, I think it was like 60% Muslim children. And that's what really gave me the inspiration to start working with that group. And, you know, we did sometimes get some families, and I think it would be the same, you know, in like a really traditional Christian family or any other religion where kind of a woman is expected to do certain things. And it did that conversation, you know, that did become a conversation that we had to have. And again, it's the same with girls and boys when you're trying to push sport in this way. A lot of people can see it as an unrealistic goal. And I was really lucky when I was young because I told my parents I wanted to go to the States. I wanted to do this and that with basketball. And never once did they say, oh, well, what if that doesn't work? But I recognize that that's not the same for a lot of kids. And we do have a lot of both, again, both male and female players who you can see are kind of a little torn between that, well, this isn't a realistic thing that I can do, and my parents want me to come home and do this, and I can't stay at training. And we do have to have those conversations with parents that, and I think the main thing that we say to them is that it's okay for them to have a goal and to not reach that goal, because it's not about you reaching the goal. It's about what you learn on that journey and the amount of commitment and dedication and all those things that you can learn from just having a plan to strive for a goal is I think in sport you can teach it better than you can teach it in the classroom. And I think once we explain it that way, that basketball is kind of the vehicle for teaching the life skills that their young person needs, I think they're a lot more like warming to the idea, because that is really what we're doing.
Is that, I mean, do you often find that's a tough conversation that you have to have? Because if, you know, if parents are kind of against it, or, you know, a lot of parents just say, you know, we'd rather they just did academics or studied or whatever. I mean, what's the kind of, I don't want to say the failure rate from that, but you know, is what sort of points do you reach where you have to kind of step away?
Yeah, we have a rule. So obviously, if you're going to commit to the team, you commit to the team. However, if there's a family thing, a school thing that happen, that always takes precedence. So family and school comes first, and then basketball should be your main priority after those two things. And generally, we do that because we believe in it, not because we want the kids as much of the time as possible. But generally, that has worked. You know, we do still get those situations where we would like a child to be more committed than they maybe are. And the reason that they're not is because parents kind of haven't bought in yet, or, you know, they're the parents that aren't usually around, like driving the players to the games and things like that, maybe because they can't be, or just maybe because they don't choose to be. But often, I think this is the other thing with having the arena, is that once those parents are around, and if they have time to be able to be around, I think it's almost like infectious. When you walk in there, you can just see like the cogs turn, and you can see in motion what we're trying to tell them verbally. I think that sometimes is a bit of a buffer. We don't usually have to kind of have really serious conversations, because once they see it, they can kind of understand.
Your own career, you went to the States, as you mentioned, to Loyola Marymount. The educational value, of course, people talk about, you get the degree, etc.
Yeah.
But I guess the thing that I guess people often forget, and when I've talked to kids or parents about scholarships, the one thing I suppose it's overlooked is the kind of cultural, life-expanding experience of it all. For you, even, I mean, you grew up in basketball, so it wasn't really something novel to you, but what did you take from kind of culturally being able to go to a different environment, and maybe even now be able to bring some of that knowledge back into what you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think culturally, like in basketball, it's a completely different world. Even now, I think we're getting closer to it. But I think even now, it's just, for me, the biggest thing that hit me was just kind of like the professionalism of it all. I'll never forget, and my coach apparently always tells this story on recruiting visits, that I walked into the locker room like on my first day, and coach showed me to my locker, and he said, "This is your locker, it'll be your locker for 4 years," and blah, 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 blah. And in this locker was just a heap of gear. There was T-shirts and travel suits and trainers and socks and sports bras, all the rest of it. And my assistant coach saw me looking at the stuff, and she said, "Oh, don't worry." And I was like, "Worry about what?" And she said, "You do get more than one pair of basketball shoes. Just whenever you finish them, just ask me for a new pair and I'll give it to you." And my coach said that if he could have taken a picture of my face and shown it to like other, he says, American recruits, to show how grateful that I was. Like, I couldn't believe what she was saying. I'm like, I was not even thinking about that at all. I was thinking about the fact that you've just given me like $500 worth of stuff for free. And I think that's one of the biggest things that hit me when I went there, was like the professionalism. And also, I think it's where I really learned like my stickler for details, and how important details are, and when the details are put in place at the right time, in the right space, it can really kind of create success. So I think for me, like culturally, basketball wise, that was the biggest thing. But then, you know, the city that I lived in was a really multicultural city. I lived in Baltimore. I'd lived in Nottingham. So Nottingham is pretty multicultural anyway, but I had been living with my family. Here I was you know, living independently out on my own, able to do and make the choices that I wanted to make. And I think no matter where you go for university, just being on your own, you learn a lot about who you are and who you want to be and who you kind of want to fashion yourself into being. And I, you know, I think the States was a big part of that. I was there when Obama got elected for the first time. I went with my friend when she voted for him. There was some really pivotal moments where I was like, I'm here, like at this time, I'm here seeing this. And these are kind of like the moments that people will talk about in history. And it was amazing. There were so many kind of situations like that that I think have kind of driven who I am now. You know, I was at a liberal arts college, so I had to take classes in everything before I chose my major. I had to do philosophy, I had to do a psychology, a social science, I had to do everything before I chose my major. And that was another thing. You know, we got a really well-rounded education. I didn't go there and just study one thing for 4 years. And that's another massive reason why kind of I am the way that I am. And I'm interested in a lot of different things. And the other thing I'd say is that... sorry, I'm a little sick. I'm getting out of breath. The other thing that I would say is that there's a big, big emphasis on community hours. At my school especially, but I know that that's the same in a lot of athletic programs across the country in the States. There's kind of an expectation that you give back to the community around you, that you do certain hours of community service throughout the year. And that's been a massive reason why I think I find those things so important now. And even, you know, to this day, I make sure that every year I do something, even if it's just for 2 hours, that I get involved with something that helps my community, like that helps Nottingham. And I make sure that, you know, my team will do that at Christmas time. So, yeah, I think I learned a lot of lessons just from being away and being in the environment that I was in.
I mean, you mentioned Baltimore. We always think of the Wire. You would have been there when the Wire was on, right?
Yeah.
But if it was anything like, did anything like your experience of the Wire? Were you dodging your gangs and the FBI agents or whatever in downtown Baltimore?
No, it's, you know, like any place, if you know where not to go, you're fine. Baltimore is like a hidden gem. I don't think it's given half the credit it deserves. You know, it's got the Orioles, it's got the Ravens. The only thing it doesn't have is a basketball team. It's got an inner harbour. It's an absolutely beautiful place. I think, you know, recently, just with the riots and obviously the Wire as well, sometimes it gets a bad reputation. But, you know, it's the same as any city. If you know where not to go, you're fine. And I honestly never really saw anything that scared me or made me feel uneasy. I just loved my 4 years there, and I would send any one of my young players there tomorrow.
Or the future children that everyone expects you to have.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you played your first professional season over in Greece for Apollon, and I mean, that was, tell me about that year, because I know it was a tough year in terms of how the business of that club panned out.
Yeah, it was. So I remember my agent coming to me with the contract. I remember first my agent coming to me and I'm like, what? I really didn't expect it coming out of college. But, you know, he had some really good people on his books. And that's one of the reasons that I trusted him in the beginning. Then I called Jennifer Derevjanik. She was our point guard that had signed that year for Apollon as well. She had been there the previous year, so I called her. You know, she was a WNBA player, like she'd played at a really high standard. And I called her and asked her about the club, and she said that the year before it had been like perfect. She'd been treated like really well. She was a little worried about playing in Greece because it was the first time she played in Greece, only because of she'd heard things about people not getting paid. And I said, well, yeah, that's the only worry that I had. So she assured me kind of that everything was fine the previous year. And that, you know, like, I think it's important to remember that when I graduated and went into the working world, as it were, economic climates weren't great, were they, all across Europe. But when I got to Greece, things were a little different, and it was really through no fault of the club, or my coach or the organization. It was just one person had made a bad choice, and that had kind of resulted in the fact that there wasn't a lot of money left. The football team had been relegated from the first division to the fourth, I think it was, because of this choice that was made. And we really weren't privy to any of that until like a month in. So we got paid the first month, and then it just kind of all started going downhill from there. And it was difficult for me. The Americans stayed there until Christmas, and I just left and came home to play for Wildcats, and Wildcats paid me to play for that time that I stayed in England. Yeah, it was tough because it wasn't kind of what I'd envisioned it. That's all I'd ever wanted to do since a kid was play professionally. But the place was lovely. The people were lovely. You know, my coach, my teammates, it was just like the economic situation just wasn't right. And I know that happens to a lot of people and a lot of players when they go out and play professionally, and it is one of the risks. But yeah, that's kind of what happened to me.
I mean, you had other offers to go overseas, and I know you said that, I guess, that experience left you scarred enough to put you off some of those. But is there ever any kind of sense of slight regret that you didn't go back and test yourself in a sort of bigger, more glamorous league outside the WBBL?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't say regret, because I don't regret anything. I think as I get older, I'm a kind of firm believer in what happens to you is supposed to happen to you, and the choices that you make, even if they're not the right choice at the time, they always come to be the right choice. So, but I do think if I had my time over again, because I even remember sitting with my dad and Mark Clark, and I'd been given this offer to Liga Dia in Spain, and I didn't want to take it. And I remember talking to, and Mark was saying, you know, why, this is a good team. It could be a really good, you know, spot for you, especially after last year and, you know, what you went through last year. So, and I think I told him, what I told him was that I didn't want to play in Division 2. And that wasn't really the reason. I massively respected Division 2 in Spain. Like, it wasn't the real reason. I think the real reason was that I was just a little bit frightened. I was frightened because of what had happened the first year, the kind of the place that I'd had to live in, and the like the pitfalls of everything. That I just didn't want to go back out there, and that was sort of, you know, the excuse that I gave at the time. It's interesting now as well, because when I go to GB camp and I talk to the girls, and they talk to, when we have like younger players come into camp, and they'll talk to them about their first year pro. And if you can get through your first year pro and like continue with it, you'll be fine. Kind of a little bit like when you go to the States, if you can get through your freshman year, you'll be absolutely fine. And so I think kind of just talking to them and realizing that actually everybody kind of went through that their first year, or if they didn't, they were very lucky. I probably would have stuck with it a little more, but I didn't. And you know, my life kind of took a different path, but I'm still really happy with everything that I did achieve and kind of the path that it took.
I mean, you still be able to get into the GB team, even playing in the WBBL. I suppose it's a good time to maybe talk about Saturday night, because GB beating Greece by 2 points. You were commentating on the game. Of course, if GB had won by 3, they'd have automatically qualified for Eurobasket 2019. Yeah. Now the girls have to beat Portugal on Wednesday evening in Manchester to reach the finals. I mean, first of all, assess that performance against the Greeks.
Unbelievable, wasn't it? I don't think I've ever seen us shoot so well. We were just class. Like, I think from everyone that came on, like from the bench players all the way to the starters, everybody kind of knew their role, they'd accepted their role, they knew the scouting report, and they really just took the responsibility of taking every moment that they were given and shining in the moment. You know, I think there was a few like standout performances. Like, you can't not mention Jo. Like, you know, like, she's always, I mean, I've had like the privilege of playing with Jo since we were younger, because we're both 87 born. But she really put the team in those important moments, put the team on her back, and led just like Jo does. But like, again, you could go on for hours, like Carly, Georgia, Chantel, like the shots that they made, again, like just massive shots, that if they hadn't have made them in those moments, the game could have been completely different. And had, you know, especially that first half, had we not come out the way we'd come out, executed defensively the way we did, I think, you know, they were kind of stunted. They didn't really know what to do in the first half, Greece. And I just think, you know, it's testament to the preparation and to Chema and how, you know, well he prepares for those teams, and to the girls for doing what they did, because you can be prepared all you want, but if you can't do it when it matters, the preparation doesn't count for anything. And, you know, they really did, and it was really good to see.
I mean, GB is going to be the outstanding favourite against the Portuguese, especially with home advantage. I mean, how important do you think, in working at right down to the grassroots level that you do, how important is it going to be for the sport, for the GB programme, for the WBBL, that after all the upheavals that we've seen over the past 12, 18 months, that those players seal the deal and make it through to Eurobasket Women?
Yeah, it's massive. I think they will, just for the record. So I think, but above anything, I think because they deserve it, like, above kind of talking about grassroots level and everything else, that group of players, that staff, they just massively deserve it, because I can't explain to you how, I don't know how he does it, but that environment that Chema has fashioned, the positive environment, it's, he doesn't allow for any negativity. There's never a moment where a player is bigger than the team. Everybody is there to play for GB. Everybody has pride to play for GB. And he's created that environment. And, you know, the girls thrive in it. It's a great environment to be part of. And I think, above all else, as a team and as a staff, it's winning on Wednesday is what we deserve. But then, obviously, yeah, if you look at the ramifications from that win, they're massive. You never know what can happen at a Eurobasket. I mean, we've just beat Greece. They came fourth in the last Eurobasket. So I think, you know, getting over this hurdle on Wednesday and then just giving ourselves the chance to prove ourselves again on a big stage. And I think, again, the players that we have are able to produce on that stage. You know, the ramifications for that could be massive. They really could.
Last topic. This Sunday, quarterfinals of the WBBL Cup. Wildcats at home against Manchester Mystics. You guys are the holders. Does that change the urgency at all?
Not really. I suppose it's in the back of your mind. You know, the cup's there as you walk in the foyer. But I just think I just take it, and I know that Kenrick and the rest of our team will take it. It's another game. You know, you look at these like cup competitions as little 3-game tournaments within your league. They're a nice little break from league play, and we'll be just looking at it as this is the first game out of 3 that we have to win, to win the whole thing. And again, we'll just be focusing on what we need to do. We will look a little bit at Manchester and what we have to do to kind of beat them and to slow down the things that really help them to be successful. But really, I don't think if you think about the end goal too much, you get distracted, and it takes your attention away from the little things you need to do to reach that end goal. So I think really we'll just, you know, have a good week of practice. We'll focus on what it is that we need to focus on as a team. And then one win at a time, hopefully we can lift the cup again.
And sniffles notwithstanding, will you be back for the game?
I know, I sound awful, don't I? I'm so out of breath. Honestly, all I'm doing is pacing up and down in my living room. I hope to be. It depends on what the physio says regarding my ankle. I've had an ankle injury. And as I'm older, it's a lot more difficult to get back from than it was when I was younger. depending on what he says, I'm really hoping to train this week. And then I can't really go against him because the physio is my partner, so might cause a bit of a domestic. But
at least you make sure you've got 24/7 care.
Yeah, if I listen to him, I don't always listen to him.
Oh, tough times at home. But we will be listening to you for certain on Wednesday night, 7 p.m. GB yes. against Portugal, to listen to Siobhan and the commentary team on via MVP247.com. But fingers crossed for GB. Fingers crossed for your comeback this weekend. Siobhan Parr, thank you very much for coming on the MVP cast and good luck for the rest of the season.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's it for this edition. We're available to listen via iTunes, via Stitcher, on Spotify, or via your smart devices on TuneIn Radio, or you can stream via MVP247.com. Just click on the podcast page. You can also pick up our recent chats with the likes of Dante Nicholas and Ramon Fletcher. Coming up next week, we'll have a really fascinating conversation with Gareth Maguire, who's the man behind this month's College Basketball Classic over in Belfast. But for now, for me, Mark Woods, thanks for listening, and it's goodbye.